We can just get into the conversation. Do you feel ready?
Beautiful.
Never. No, I'm just kidding. You're
not kidding me. Truly never. Let me ask you this. As a podcaster, do you ever get the feeling before you record of, God, I really don't want to do this?
Yeah, of course. Totally. Okay. I never want to do it. And then I do it in immediately like 30 seconds in. I'm like, okay, cool. This is cool. I read somewhere that James Hetfield, the singer Metallica, developed a drinking problem, as many sort of in that industry tend to do. But part of it had to do with the fact that he had stage fright so badly every time he went on stage that he had to drink. Well, he didn't have to, but he would drink a 12 ounces of Jägermeister mixed with 12 ounces of milk.
Oh my God.
And I understand being like, I don't know. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it. It's terrible. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. And then you're like, this is actually pretty cool.
There is no amount of anxiety that would have me mixing Jaeger and milk together.
It's so funny when I read that originally, and I'd love to find the source, because who knows how much I'm remembering correctly, but the way it was presented was, it was like, well, this was his solution and sort of, you know, habit forming ultimately, but like no one interrogated why the cocktail was half and half milk and Jägermeister, which is disgusting. Like, that's real gross. And sorry, James, if I got this wrong, don't come after me for defamation. I'm remembering this in good faith.
Well, he is a listener of the podcast. So sorry to tell you. to inform you, he will hear about this. So
he loves. How explicit are we able to get?
Considering the material, we're completely explicit.
He loves a big, like, rigid, notched blue cock. Like, that's what James is into.
Are we talking about Chekhov's dildo? Yes.
So you read the book. Okay. Right.
Well, let's get into it.
I sure did.
Okay. So here's the thing. You nicely came on this podcast where we discuss romance books. We are romance writers. I'm author Kat Nguyen. This is SJ Tilley. It is nice to meet you, Alex.
So nice to meet y'all.
So nice to meet you. And of course, Alex is from the podcast You Are Good, which is one of my favorite podcasts. And I listen to it all the time. In fact, I was just listening to your episode with Julie Klausner, the second one she did with Cape Fear, as I was walking. I know you posted, and then I know another one went up yesterday too, I think.
Another romantic text, Cape Fear.
Yes, very romantic. Right. You know what? But I've always said romance and horror are just right next door to each other.
Totally. Especially like sex thrillers.
Yep.
Like, they have a lot of the same beats. And it's just like, it's like one of those things where, you know, like people will take a trailer and they'll recut it with like different music and make it sound like a different genre. Like that's how related they feel.
Well, that's like the 50 Shades of Grey. If he's not rich, it's a horror film, right?
Yes.
Like,
I would posit it is itself a horror film. I would posit that. But don't get us wrong. Like, listen, Alex, you've come on to this, and I don't know that you know, but the romance community is absolutely out of their mind. Like, all of us, we are out of our minds, and we will ride for 50 Shades of Grey, but also make fun of it.
Yeah, of course. I don't know any. So part of the reason I was excited to come on the show is I don't know much about romance as a genre, but I do follow people who sort of are into it, and I get the sense that people are a little nuts, and I say that as a person who loves like B horror, B and C horror. Like, B is charitable, like C like I love stuff that is great and like elevated and hits all the, and there's stuff that's beautiful, and I love stuff that is not beautiful and hits all the marks and is you can make fun of it and love it, and I love everything in between. And so it was really interesting that, for me at least, that this was my first foray into this whole realm.
Love it.
And what an icy pond to jump into. I'm just gonna ask you a quick question too. So you read the third in the Ice Planet series, actually.
What?
I sent you the third one.
It's maybe I didn't, by the way.
Oh, did you read the first one? Okay, wait. Tell me, do you remember the main character? We've read the first one too, so we can work with it. Do you remember the main characters?
I don't. She's like a gal from maybe Texas.
Is it Georgie?
That's the first one. Georgie. Okay. Georgie Bechtel. All right. Oh my God. Rewind. Turn around.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. I should have checked with you.
I've done this before, by the way. I've done this before. on Adventure Girls podcast where we were supposed to watch Piranha 3D and I accidentally watched Piranha 3DD. So this is not a first, unfortunately.
Well, that's an easy mistake.
Yeah, to be fair, it makes more sense to have read the first book in the series and not the third, but we were just jumping ahead, so it's fair.
And we can talk about the first one, absolutely. I will not have the same kind of notes. The reason I asked you to read the third one was because I realized this was your entree into the romance world, and the third one deals with issues that you wouldn't expect, like infertility and patriarchy, things that you just like wouldn't see coming. Yeah, so the first
not
one...
Not from having necessarily read this book. Yeah. Right. I look forward to to expanding further.
Oh my God. Well, I hope that you do. But then we can talk about the first one. So let me ask you this first question. Did this subvert your expectations of what you were going to read?
Yes, in that I had no expectations, meaning not that I had zero expectations or I had low expectations. I had literally no expectations. Yeah. Like, I don't know what beats a romance novel hits. It is not, it's like, I read like excerpts of, you know, the kinds that had, you know, Fabio-esque characters on the cover when I was a kid, just to get to the horny parts. And then I read some of, There was interesting parallels here. Like there was like a series of books based on like the Alien franchise that were like for boys that had really horny scenes in them. So like it felt like, yeah, I was like, I remember the term pubic mound, like the like forever.
That
was from one of his books. Totally.
That's a good classic historical phrase. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So those are my only experience. And then Christopher Pike books sometimes would get a little horny, but in a teenage way. Yeah.
You were talking my language. Dripping. In fact, that was the only reason why I read Christopher Pike and I didn't realize it.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if they're as salacious as I remember them, but they felt salacious at the time.
They felt, I remember reading them, I was probably too young, reading in like my sixth grade class and a teacher sneaking up behind me. And I think she was reading over my shoulder and I got in trouble for what I was reading.
I'm, there was always some stuff going on. And so those are my experiences with I'm not saying this as if those are entries into the genre, but those are my experiences with anything that gets close.
Yeah.
So I will say, and I'm really nervous about talking about this book because I know that there are likely people who adore it, and I didn't not adore it, but it certainly sometimes felt like I was reading a Mad Lib where the like structure of the story existed and then they're like, okay, time to make it horny. This is where it's my time to shine. Like the plot itself, it really feels like an 80s slasher in that way where it's like the plot itself, who fucking cares? Like, how are we going to eviscerate someone? Like that's kind of where this felt. And all of the horny parts I think were kind of great. And then the rest of it, I was like, all right, this is fine. It and then I also had maybe, and I don't know how much discussion has happened in the community, I tried to look it up, but there's so much conversation about this book,
almost too much
series,
so much
that it's hard to like find, I think, kind of specific conversations, but like it did enough maneuvering to wash its hands of this, but it did feel a little like kind of native fantasy stuff that I was like, oh, I feel kind of uneasy about what's going on here. But they changed enough things with regard to, like, you know, the what are the blue people called?
The Sakwi.
Yeah, the Sakwi are not, it's not native planet stuff. Like they're on they themselves are whatever.
It's removed enough. You're saying
totally.
That.
There were a couple people. There were a couple things that were removed enough that it made you. There was enough plausible deniability to get away from the fact that the motifs that were being worked on were like native fantasy stuff, were like, you know, take me away, you know, strong, brute from the jungle,
right.
And take me away from my troubles, overpower me. Although there was enough of kind of like an internal debate that made you realize that it wasn't just sort of about like surrender and succumbing. So yeah, I don't, that was such a long answer to your question.
beautiful.
But it was certainly is a whole new horizon for me.
And to be fair too, like, these books have so much attention and so much love and clout. Like, you can say whatever you want about them too, because like, what we say is never gonna like hurt this franchise. Like, it's so
I hope Ruby is wealthy. I'm sure she is.
Oh, she is riding high. And good for her. Yeah.
She's doing very well. I've read a couple of the books now, like specifically for this podcast. They drive me insane. Like, there's a lot of stuff in them that, like, because you're right, like, you jump from here to there, and like a lot of, and I was talking to Kat today, I'm like, I feel like a lot of the time I feel like it's a little more screenplay than it is like novel, when it's just like, yeah, this happened, yeah, yeah, that happened, and you're just like, for what sure did she feel? Like, what happened? Like, where did
there? Yeah, there's no interior. Like, there is like sort of the experience, there's like sort of like described experience and response to experience, but like, I, outside of responding to things that are happening, I have no idea who these people are on their inside at all. And I don't know if you're supposed to. That's the other thing, is like, I don't know what a standard is. Like, I don't know if that's, I assume there are books that do that very, very well. This doesn't.
Yeah, correct. I would say you're spot on. Yeah. And I think especially like your commentary about, you know, is this like, are we taking from native culture? Are we trying to use this in some kind of like very white lady-esque way? I mean, obviously we have the title Ice Planet Barbarians, and that's already right there.
That didn't help.
Yeah, like a very clickbaity kind of title. You know what I mean? And it's funny that you can actually like put clickbait to books now, because we really are clicking on books and that's how we get them. But I think that I think there's criticism to be had there, and I wouldn't dismiss that criticism. I'm actually surprised that I don't see that much of it, because I think within the romance community, we're pretty much like always cutting edge when it comes to like progressive measures. Like, if there is a progressive conversation happening, it is happening in the romance community first. You know, we're going to talk about fat phobia, trans issues, like those are going to happen. However, we're also going to be engaging in those very phobias at the same time. So it's kind of like with anything, right? Yeah, well, just because, you know, obviously, you know, from reading the old, like the clinch covers, the old bodice rippers that you said you read when you were younger, which, by the way, very romance reader of you to look for the horny sections and just read those.
Yeah. I was like, I know that this is horny somewhere and I'm going to find it.
And I will do my damnedest.
The best part about ebooks now, too, is you can just like type in the search like,
oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And then you just go straight to the horny scenes, you know,
to find it. Absolutely.
Makes it easy.
That's how I've managed to only read 20% of many, many books. Just do that. But let's get into a little bit of the politics of the actual Ice Planet Barbarian. So the first thing I would say is, in the first book, I don't know what version you read. So did you read the graphic on page rape?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Shocked.
Yes. Yes.
I was
shocked. Shocking.
Within,
right?
Pages, like,
right, it's right
this
away
is how you were introduced to the series, and I probably, like many, was like, are these the Ice Planet Barbarians that were
right. Yeah.
And I get that we're setting up like a contrast or whatever, and I get also that, like, you know, the fantasy and everyone's fantasies look different and people have fantasies of different extremes, whatever. But like, I also get that, you know, the idea of being abducted and held captive probably in most circumstances isn't going to be ideal. It isn't going to be great. But I was really surprised that we came out the gate swinging that hard.
It was kind of a warning, wasn't it? I felt like, oh, I know what I'm signing up for right off the bat. And from there on, she can basically do anything as a writer.
Well, what was surprising is it happens, and then it's the most extreme thing that happens. To me, it was surprising
by far
that we didn't, you know, it's like if Hereditary started with a child getting decapitated in a car and the rest of the movie was just people talking. You know what I mean? Like, it was like... And you're like,
a good
why
comparison.
Did we start with a decapitation?
Yeah.
I think it was to get your attention, right? Like,
and it did.
It's a clickbait. Yeah.
And, and I also, and by no means, listen, I'm me. I'm everything you see in here before you. And so I am not a person to weigh what is appropriate and what is not in books. My voice has been heard in literature forever, the entire time. But I did, though, also, when I read, I was very curious to read what people's takes and stuff were. And I saw in like a number of reviews that were like there should be a warning that this is in there, like this is sort of like a very intense, like very big thing to happen or whatever. And I don't have any sort of take on, nor should I necessarily have any take on that. I don't have any take on that, but I also, and I think that there is like a large conversation about like how much like brutality against women, particularly rape, happens in science fiction on screen and in pages. Like, I totally get that, but I don't know, like, what was the conversation, I guess, that happened when this came out? Because is that a thing that happens often in these books, or is that
not any? No, so this was the first book, and this book, I think, isn't super reflective of the other books so much. I mean, it definitely sets the scene, and this is the world that we're living in, and it does some world building work. But after this book, which I think came out in 2015, so it's almost been like 10 years since it's been out, Ruby has come a long way. I would say the writing has changed, you know, the world building has changed, kind of like the thematic issues we're dealing with have changed. And in this first book, I think she was going for a shock value. There has since been a trigger warning added. Originally there wasn't, which is most people's problem. So like romance will take a lot. There's dark romance. SJ just wrote, is writing a dark romance series right now where terrible, brutal things happen and women could be brutalized, right? But I think we always have to take care of our readers first. And that's really where that's the responsibility of a writer to do. And she didn't do that at first. So I think there was the trigger warning added. If that's enough,
like, what was our conversation in 2015 about? I mean, totally I understand different. That we were having conversations about trigger warnings, et cetera, but like, it feels like it wasn't an accepted part of the vernacular in a way. And I'm not excusing it. But I think also I'm trying to also undo what might be learned sort of cultural trauma on some level, where it's like, again, I grew up on horror and I'm like, you're reading a horror. Like you're watching horror, you know, some shit's going to go down, like kind of go into it knowing, like, if this happened in, I don't know, if this happened in another kind of book, I think I would have been like more shocked and caught off guard. But I guess I am glad. I'm sorry, I'm working this out, obviously.
Please do. We love a therapy session.
I am glad that there is like in our episodes of You Are Good, you know, we just talked about Little Miss Sunshine. And if I was like, hey, let's have a conversation about Little Miss Sunshine, you wouldn't think that there needs to be a suicide trigger warning, a depression trigger warning, an eating disorder trigger warning. Like, you wouldn't think that. But I guess like people should be told about the sorts of things that they're going to encounter, because you shouldn't just assume that like because you're going into a genre related thing, you're going to get brutalized in some way. Like, you might get brutalized in specifically the way that's difficult for you. And I'm glad that people have the heads up that we didn't have when I was younger.
Well, and that's what makes romance so different, too, is that because it's, you know, it's huge and it's, you know, doesn't get a lot of mainstream stuff, but it's like, it's a safe space. Cause like, what makes a romance is the happily ever after. It all has an HEA. Right. And so, you know, going into it that you're going to have that, but they're like, romance is such a wide range between right to rom-com to like this, to like the dark mafia, to everything else in between. And so it has become just standard practice with like the content warning, the trigger warning, and then people can choose not to read it if they don't want to, because then there's always like, now you're going to spoil, right? Like, now you know that all these things are going to be in this movie or in this book or what have you, but it's like, but you need to know. So if like you really don't want to read that, because if you're picking up, you look at the cover of Ice Planet Barbarians, everyone's reading it, everybody's freaking read it, and you're like, pick it up, and that's how it starts, and you're like, what the fuck,
graphic brutal rape right at the beginning, right off the top.
And it also, though, reminds of all of the like 80s media I grew up on that I feel like always just started with some deep trauma. Like, it was always it's always like, sorry, your parents are dead. Now we're going to go on an adventure. You know what I mean? Like,
it'll be fine.
You're like, all right. Cool.
It mirrors our lives as people who were all probably born in the 80s, whereas like we grew up in dark, deep trauma. And now here we are just working it out and reading things too. And I think that's why a lot of people watch horror. That's certainly why a lot of people read romance, is because you know, it doesn't have to be like pathological, but it's certainly one of our coping mechanisms is art.
Yeah, everything has to be. I'm so sorry to disagree, but everything has to be pathological. I don't know a life in which everything isn't seen through a lens of pathology.
Yeah. We're on the opposite end. I'm like, nothing is pathological. Absolutely nothing. Cool.
I love it. Yeah. I love it. I'd love to wear those glasses for a full day without I feel like I'd experience joy in a different way. I'm like, what would Wilhelm Reich say about this situation? People are like, shut the fuck up.
But how can I look at this through a lens that ruins it for me? Speaking of looking at things through a lens that will ruin it. And also speaking of like content warnings, and I want to say also just one quick note, the rape scene was taken out of the Berkeley paperback editions of this book, which are being sold in like Target and Walmart and places like that.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, this was originally self-published. So Ruby Dixon was a bitch that went out on her own, said, I'm going to write whatever I want, and fucking blew up. I mean, just like unreal amounts. Yeah. So
that's interesting. The trade things coming out, because like when I was, I don't know if you remember when Nirvana's In Utero came out, in order to sell at Walmart, they had to change the name of the song Rape Me to Waif Me. And oh, I remember no. that
I don't
really
remember that.
Standing out in my head for some reason and being like, I should take note of this forever. And it's interesting that that's still a thing that they're working on. In order to get sold at Walmart, you can have particular forms of brutality, but not other forms of brutality.
Well, and that's what's so, I mean, two comments. The first one, like also too, like part of like the whole conversation of like that starting the rape scene and everything else was like, because that's the character she just like kills off in the snow, right?
Right.
Which is the cherry on the top of the brutality, you don't matter, you're a sci-fi throwaway hot woman with red hair. That's like literally how that comes across.
Yeah, because it was, we're gonna do this like tremendous thing that shocks you, but then we're not gonna have to deal with it.
Right. It's like a fridging, as it were, I guess. Yeah.
Totally. So just pass it off. But then too, like back to like putting stuff in stores, right? This is something that we see all the time in romance, especially, is when books get picked up. And I don't know what the Ice Planet Barbarian covers look like in stores.
They're different.
Is it the same cover? They're different? Because that's the thing. Like, all the other big authors that we know of that get like these deals, their covers change from something that could be salacious or sexy to like totally plain and normal, which it's like, because then we can sell it in stores. But I'm like, but then people don't know what they're getting, you know, like, because you're like, look at this cute cover.
Although like, I want to be fair. Ice Planet Barbarians, there's no way.
That's true. That title.
You could put like a like an etching from the 1830s on the cover and hopefully you know how words work. But the
that's a good point. Yes.
But you are right. Like I do know there have been any number of instances where a book has had a new cover and you're like, oh, like maybe this is sort of like a nice pastoral time, and it is very not like that.
Nice pastoral time. What's the opposite of what's an icy pastoral time? The thing with the ice planets too is that, so we have the rape scene in the beginning, which I do think Ruby Dixon atones for in a later book in the series, where she actually handles another character who has been sexually assaulted by the aliens. And if you want to like, she handles it in a much more delicate way. I don't know. There's certainly criticism that could be had, but in this first one, she didn't. However, we have another issue that happens right off the bat. So in the beginning, Georgie is sent out into the ice to go after, the green aliens have crashed on the ice planet, to go find anybody. And she gets trapped by Vectol, and who is kind of like King Ice Planet Barbarian. And he definitely engages in a little cunnilingus without her consent. In fact, she wakes up to that. I'm going to say, like, just along the lines of with like the rape issue, I would say in the year of our Lord 2023 would not happen in a romance novel at this point. I don't think so. Not in these big names. I really don't see like this kind of like dubious consent happening in something like a sci-fi. It would maybe happen in like a dark romance, but this one I feel like has been hotly debated too. How did you feel? Did you get the ick, or were you on board? Because it's kind of
conflicting. To be honest, I didn't even pick it up specifically because I think it took me a long time to understand it took me like half the book to get to the sort of alternating perspective, to have the alternating perspective thing click, to understand like what was like assumed to be okay not that it necessarily matters, but what was assumed to be okay what was sort of like what she was actually into. And I eventually picked it up, but I think like next to, and by no means am I saying a non-consensual sort of oral,
don't worry. We're not trying to, this is not a gotcha podcast.
No. I know, but you never know.
It's a sensitive topic. I get it.
By no means am I comparing these saying one is better, but the first one I feel like hit me hard for a while. And then everything else, and then maybe that's kind of part of the disservice that's done with that non-consensual piece. Is like after what you were just hit with, it's like hard to process much after that. But that didn't strike me as much. And maybe, and this is probably part of the disservice that's done, because it pretty quickly turns from non-consensual into Georgie is really into this at breakneck speed. So I think I didn't have enough time, again, as I was sort of adjusting the perspectives, and then as I was I feel like the speed from non-consensual to like she's super horny for this guy was pretty quick.
It absolutely, well, and that's where like that dubious consent comes in, right? Where it's like the dub con, and that's where that discussion is. And you're right, when it's lined up after a complete non-con, like total non-consent rape, to then this, it does feel like different, right? It's like it's softer. Yeah. And then you, and when in your her mindset, and it's like, oh, she's enjoying, she's like, I know I should stop him, but also this is nice. And but it's like, but that's still, and this comes back into like that content warning, trigger warning, like nowadays, right? It would say first off non-con, but then also dubious consent, because this would technically qualify as that. But like, and she like never reprimands him for it. Well, maybe she does kind of a little bit.
Well,
but like,
she doesn't have I think that this is the thing that gets buried in the actual, the quote unquote plot. And I don't mean that in a shitty way. I mean, just like the mechanics of the plot that part, like her ability for recourse is limited by, at this point, the fact that they don't understand each other until three quarters of the way into the book. They're operating on, and I think that that's obviously part of the fantasy, right? Is it's like, wouldn't it be great
that
if
men
you had,
can't talk?
Totally. You had a like a physically loyal, cut, whatever Navi, like Avatar-esque character, who fucks you with a giant cock and whatever. And but also you can't understand any of the stupid shit that he's thinking or saying.
Perfection.
Dynamic.
Yeah. Dynamic. This is why this is so popular.
So I did also think that like a lot of those like nuances understandable and worth exploring nuances were also kind of lost to the fact that there's like no communication. Like all of the communication is entirely to the self for three quarters of the book. It's these two characters talking to themselves about what's happening and not engaging each other about what's okay, what's not okay, et cetera.
You could also say though that consent is more than just verbal, and that they do demonstrate that later. The other thing I will say that I think makes this even more nuanced and confusing is that we're not talking about a difference of culture between the two of them, really. Well, we are. We're talking about a difference of culture, but we're talking about a difference of species. So in Vectol's species, like when you resonate with someone, that is consent, essentially. Like they've never had anyone say no. Like it would just not be on their planet. That's not possible. Of course, they do, like the idea that you would, you know, like sexually assault somebody would not even occur to them. They also don't have capitalism on this planet, and we can't talk about this if you guys want, but I would say that they also don't have patriarchy, although there are certain like threads of patriarchy we could easily unravel that happen based on like the forced breeding pregnancy stuff. But with the resonance, it's like, yeah, that's a yes to him.
Right. Well, I think that's a great point. I think that's part of where also that as like a point of a thing that happened that's worth examination didn't strike me as hard, because it never gave me the sense that, it never gave me the sense that he was like, I'm going to do this thing. Like it gave me the sense that he's like, he's coming at this, like, this is entirely expected of me. Like, this is what we do, even though, you know, it's whatever. Like, I think that that's kind of the thing that ended up hitting me. And then we get and to your point, I mean, these are different species, but like the two species have different cultural expectations. And we do get throughout, when they are finally able to communicate, we do get this tension between, as you're saying, there's the resonance, which is kind of like what answers yay or nay or consent related issues within his culture. And she's all about choosing whether or not you can choose your mate, like whether or not that is, itself is like a consensual thing. And so there is a larger conversation about individual versus collective expectations, consent, culture, you know, sort of like cultural expectations that happens, mm-hmm. which is like actually the most interesting part of the plot. Although they set it up like it's going to be the most interesting part of the plot. And then they're like, oh, fuck it. I'm going to I've made the decision. But yeah. I do like every time it felt very male where he keeps referring to her as his mate. And she's like, or, you know, they keep referring to like the women who need saving. Like there's an inevitability that they're going to be sort of all of them. They're going to be mates for the group. And every time it comes up, she's like, and he's like, well, we'll talk about it later. Like, that's like such a fucking male thing. Like that. It was like, I can't talk about this now. We'll talk about it later. It's like, when is later?
It's off the page. It's off the romance page. Yeah. And also like, I just think there's like, you said, it's kind of like a Mad Libs and I totally hear you on this because I think we're working with like very campy, like fill in the blank 1980s Spaceballs aliens, like, oh, little green aliens, like big orange aliens, you know, and then we have the big blue aliens who you're gonna fuck. And like, isn't that always the question? Where is the alien we're gonna fuck? I know that's relevant to us today in the recent congressional hearings.
Absolutely.
But
do any of these aliens have game? That's what we're concerned.
Yeah. They have Riz, as the kids say. We're all too old to say that. I'm so sorry.
It's fine. You have to do what you have to do.
I do feel like there's a thread of body positivity here, though, as well. Like, you know, when you're talking about how they're totally different species, but he's like, we resonate. He doesn't care that she's some little fleshy human thing that's like not made for him, you know, and they don't care like the different hair colors, different skin colors, whatever. They're just like, you're ours.
They're good with the pubic hair. No questions about that. We don't get
into
any. Doesn't
have a tail, so they can do it doggy. And that's new for him. And that's great.
And we call that a positive outlook on life. I mean, talk about an optimist.
There's a part where she basically like presents and she's like, I don't have a tail. And that's the funniest part of the whole book to me was the body positivity was turned into a new sexual experience, which is great.
As it should be.
Why
not?
I do think, though, if we were in this position and some creature came onto this planet and they had dead-looking eyes, because she doesn't get the qui until later on, and he keeps saying her dead eyes, and also if they were, like, missing bones and they were just, like, gelatinous in certain places, like she is in comparison to the Saqui, I don't think we would want to fuck that. I don't know. That could just be me, though. I don't have a symbiote in my chest.
I am not a person who looks at animated animals and say, I want to fuck them. But we have plenty of people who want to fuck animated animals, and all power to them. We have a sizable furry community that listens to our show. I love them. I don't get it. It's not for me, but I am glad that people want to fuck what they want to fuck. And our big blue fella wants to fuck this jelly dead-eyed girl. Very nice of him.
I mean, they do us a favor.
Love does crazy things.
Really does. The queen does favor. Well, and that's, like, Ruby Dixon, makes him very humanoid still, you know? Like, so it's like the alien, but he's still got, like, big muscles and, like, a normal-looking cock. Like, I mean, big, but, like,
is it normal-looking?
Like, it's normal enough, considering it's a different species from an alien planet.
It's got,
you know,
the thing on it. What do they call it?
The spur.
The pinky. The spur. Yes.
The spur for her third
multi-use.
Nipple. Like,
oh, wow.
I don't know. Or you turn
like
it around.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. That they must sell one, right? There must be.
Oh, God. I'm sure.
Ruby.
It's got to be
based
on.
You're not selling one.
Yeah.
You gotta sell one.
It's
gotta
be
if you're listening.
Well, I'll say this too. If you ever do end up reading any more in this series, in the third book, there is the Saqui character. He whittles, because he's an artist, whittles his dick, like a likeness of it, and gives it to the woman who he thinks is his fated mate. They haven't resonated, but he gives it to her. And I don't remember why I was saying that. Anyway, that's what he does. It's funny.
It's not
and
wood, I,
think, I
hope.
It was bone. Made out of bone. That's a great question. Thank it's God. Made out of bone. Yeah. Thank Even God. Bone, though, I have questions about. It's,
I mean, yeah. really anything other than
right,
yeah. like
some kind medical of silicone. Grade. Yeah.
It's not recommended. Totally. I don't. Yeah. She doesn't use it, but she does put it on her mantle.
So. We're in risky territory. No, she uses yeah. it.
Could you, so long story short, we were supposed to cover another book and I accidentally read the first book. How do you find, like, what are the progressions in this, in the third book? Like, what do you feel like the third book is accomplishes maybe that the first didn't? How have things changed?
So I think we are moving away from this kind of campy sci-fi, although it still is and it retains those elements. And we're moving more into like discussion of really important things. Like the main theme is one, well, there's two themes. One is infertility and the other is the main conflict is that the two characters do not resonate with each other. But the male character, which I love, like personally, I was like, this is such a good conflict because the whole, like the crux of this planet hinges on whether or not you resonate with somebody, because that means you can have children together because resonance is interlinked with the ability to have a baby. So she thinks that she's infertile because on Earth she's infertile. And then when she gets on the planet, she's worried about her place within the world because she's like, I cannot contribute to this society. So are they going to oust me? Like, what good am I? Which is also a disability conversation to be had that I find to be really interesting. And like what happens in the end is the question is like he chooses her anyway, of course, spoiler, it's going to be a happy ending, but he chooses her anyway. I won't give it all away, but he chooses her, right? Regardless, no matter what. And so does the entirety of the tribe, because they don't see people as just an ends to a means as we would in like a capitalist society. What can you produce? What can you give? You know, they see her as a whole human who belongs with them, and they all work to take care of each other, which I found to be, I cried like the entire book. I know SJ didn't. She feels nice. Differently. She feels differently, but there are certain things that will make me cry, and that is definitely one of them. So it's definitely, it's a divergence from the first book in many ways.
SJ, why? What's your disagreement? I can't wait.
No, well, the disagreement, also, I feel like we just need to spoil the end of this. There's no reason not to spoil it.
Oh,
the,
okay.
Book three.
Well, as long as you don't care, Alex.
Oh, no, I'll read it. And now I'm interested. I will read it, but
Because the end, too, spoils everything that Kat just set up, right? The whole,
yes, it does.
The whole thing is because they choose each other, which is great. And then, ta-da, they resonate, and ta-da, she can get pregnant.
Yep, yep.
Okay,
gotcha. You're like, oh.
And then you're like, well, what is the happy ending? What is the happy ending here? Does this mean the happy ending is getting pregnant and getting, like, quote-unquote, married, essentially? Right. And then, boo. For me, you know, I was like, I thought a much more beautiful story was we choose each other regardless. To me, that's a beautiful story.
I like one where he's like, here's my whittled dick, I'm out.
I mean,
that's a happy ending.
Listen, what's a better love story than a woman and her whittled alien dick? I can't think
there's
of a better
there's one. A great, I don't know if you saw the miniseries of Watchmen when it came out a couple years ago, but there's
I didn't
a,
watch it.
There is a bit that felt like it was straight from what you're talking about because Dr. Manhattan, who's a super, super blue man, dies at some point, and we meet his old lover, who's now sort of beyond middle age, and she has a replica of his big blue dick. And I was nice. Like, hell yeah. Happy ending.
So what you're telling me is this is just a universal, like, this is a universal collective piece of art
totally.
That we all work
we're
with.
We're all thinking about this.
When he whittles that and hands it to her, like, this is, like, the most primitive form of an unsolicited dick pic, right? Like, you're like,
that is also
here
true.
It is. Here it is. You didn't ask for this, but here's my actual fucking cock. Like,
it only would have been better if he was holding a fish at the same time that he caught at the same time.
Exactly.
And wearing a Bassmaster's hat or whatever.
And he's like, I'm 6'7" if it matters.
Actually.
If it matters.
I don't know, since you dabble in the horror space and you haven't dabbled in the romance space so much, but are you familiar with a fated mates trope?
Like, as in people who are destined to be together?
As like a story that you've read, like in any kind of entertainment media that you're consuming.
Oh, I mean, I'm not familiar from like a critical standpoint, but I do feel like it's all that there is.
This is true. This is true.
In a lot of fiction, is it always feels like. you know, that the fated mates meet. They don't quite realize that they're fated mates yet, try to fight the fate. Something happens three quarters of the way in order to make you think that it might not ultimately happen, and then they happen. Like, is that what we're dealing
with? Nailed it.
Yeah, you got it. You're ready to write a romance novel. Yeah. But like, you got all the beats. But like, if fated mates is the thing, then does consent exist at all?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think like that's a great question. I mean, the obviously, so like within the trope, like people maintain individual autonomous personhood and have like needs and desires, and in order to like honor, in theory, to honor their you know, to honor their personhood is to honor their trust and respect boundaries, etc. You know, that seems like a relatively, to men at least, a relatively new idea.
Yes. Yeah.
And not to, and I, when I say that, I also don't want, I'm reading Carmen Maria Machado's Into the Dream House right now. And I don't want to, whenever I say that, it sounds so essentialist. It sounds like there aren't these transgressions in like queer communities and et cetera. But yeah, men in particular feel new to this idea.
Yeah. No shit. I think it's fair to place men in the spotlight of that. And acknowledge that it happens in other groups.
I just have to say, I've been on enough shows at this point and said enough things where I know there will always be a person who's like, by not saying this thing, what did you mean? And I'm like, I can't say all the things at one time. I'm so sorry.
Oh my God. It haunts me. Well, like we have a small audience. You have a large audience. You get to a lot of people. Our audience, not that big. And I still will think about things like one sentence I said or listen to cringe so hard every time.
I feel like on some level one shouldn't have to do the disclaimer, but like on another level, I want to be like, that thing that I said that you think was the 100% totality of everything I believe is not actually that.
It's shockingly not everything I believe in a 45-minute
podcast. I can't say anything without 45 footnotes, and I was not afforded that luxury.
totally understand. I mean, and we're bringing you into like the thick of it, to be fair. This is something that, especially as a man, and did I tell you, you're the first man to ever come on this podcast?
Woo! That's ever. Amazing. Thanks for having me, and especially at this historic moment on your show.
This is a historic moment for the Tall, Dark, and Fictional podcast, where we've never actually had any tall, dark, or non-fictional men on.
Yeah.
But yeah, it certainly is like you want to think like carefully about what you're saying. And this applies to the books that we read. And like as writers, like you want to think so carefully about what you're writing and being able to accept the criticism of it. And I think that's kind of like, that's the rub of creation.
Well, you just don't know. You don't know what context. So like I was thinking about this about Parenthood, right? Is it's like, you, even if you do all of the best things that made the most sense and had the most consensus for being the best, most intelligent things in the year of our Lord 2023, as you said earlier, come 2053, norms and standards are going to be different. Inevitably, what you did, you should have thought about this and you should have thought about that. And you're going to create a product, being your child, that is going to arrive 20 years into the future, not fully equipped for like what that context is, because you raised them at a particular context. And I think that about writing or saying or doing anything is like, you say a thing, it will live and be able to be retrieved anywhere forever. And you know, even things that you said in good faith could be wrong for the moment, for the later moment, because you don't necessarily know what they are. And we covered Gone Girl on the show a couple of years ago, maybe a year and a half ago. And we covered it because we wanted to. We had a great guest who loved the movie, loved the book, wanted to talk about both of those things. We recorded it. And then the Depp Heard trial was happening. And I was like, we just buried we didn't release it. Because I was like, this is not the time to have nuanced conversations about this. I mean, in theory, in an ideal world, this is the time to have nuanced conversations. But one side of this has made it clear that nuance is not interesting to them. And so now is not the time to have a conversation that that is nuanced because the discourse at that present moment could not handle that. And absolutely. So sometimes you also just have to honor knowing the context that's going out, it, you know, can change within a month, let alone, mm-hmm. you know, 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah, that's like a discretion you have, like, again, another responsibility that you have to take as somebody who's creating, even just creating any kind of content and putting it out there. Because, like, we don't want to be harmful. You know, we don't, right. we want to be like a net good to the world. Now, are we? is Ice Planet Barbarians a yes. net good?
I
think so too. But tell me why you think.
I don't know. I thought, like, I'm curious. I'm going to. I'll answer, but I'll also ask a question, which is I'm curious to know why you both think that this book has been received in the way that it is, because I don't know. I didn't necessarily like get the sense with no context or nothing to hold this up against that this felt special to me. It just felt like whatever, like I said, it felt a little Mad Libby. It was entertaining. The horny pieces were great. All of that was fun. And like, I'm a bit of a positive nihilist. I don't think anything has meaning. I think like if we can make positive meaning out of things and live our lives without harming people, I think that's the most important thing to like whatever extent we're able to do so and consciously. And so I don't think that a, you know, trashy, silly, horny book is any better or worse than anything else. And in fact, for many people, if it can help create joy in the face of a totally chaotic, fucked up reality, great. Yeah. It did a service.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's like, right. Like art takes us out of reality. Like you thank have God. Lots of reasons for art, like, yeah, conversation, whatever. But like ultimately it's escapism. And yeah. like, how much further can you escape than an ice planet? Like, you know, so it's like, I think it gives us a lot of things too. Like, and because can't point out right, like it published 2015, like the first one. I think these, correct me if I'm wrong, like these hit big during like COVID, right? Like TikToks. This is a recent, yeah, because it was like, when did we need the most escape ever, right? Has been these mm-hmm. last couple of years. Like we were just talking to someone like pre-COVID, I'm like, what even was pre-pandemic life? Like I don't even remember.
Totally, you know, I have no like, idea.
I do yeah, not remember. So, I'm a different person now.
Yeah, so long ago. And it's like, and I think too, it's always... And you see this phenomenon everywhere, whether it's in books or movies or what have you, where there are certain things that get very popular and very famous, and they aren't necessarily the best of their kind.
Yeah.
You know, like, no offense to the series, but, like, there are, I've read other alien books that are, I would say, arguably way better written, you know, like, bigger plots, bigger everything else. But, mm-hmm. like, that doesn't necessarily matter, because once something trends, it's just a curiosity. And so I think it's kind of the same thing as, like, 50 Shades, right? Like, we love to shit on it, like... Because, yeah, poorly written, problematic, had problems,
embarrassing.
Whatever. Yeah. But it brought attention to romance. And there's a lot of people that started reading romance because they were at 50 Shades. There's a lot of people that picked up Ice Planet Barbarians. And then they were like, this is fucking weird, but I like those horny parts. What totally. Else does romance have to offer? And then they fell into this whole like world where, again, like there's like 400 and some subgenres. Like you can find anything. Like totally. Whatever you're interested in.
And I think
in.
That that's so... And I think that like, you know, the overlap between 50 Shades and fan fiction is a thing that I think is pretty well known. And I kind of get that I get that sense in sci-fi. I get that sense in like that I get that sense in sci-fi. I get that sense in romance a little bit. I get that sense of like that these are spaces where fans are able to explore things that aren't immediately in front of them or necessarily in their physical realities, mm-hmm. which is a huge part of our cultivation of self and individual identity, cultural identity, et cetera, that we're often not afforded in our lives, often because of how elements of, you know, oppressive elements of capitalism work. And so having these spaces where people can go in not just self-explore, self-examine, but frolic. I think that that's really special.
That's
really
a great
special.
Term for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can it's frolic all the way through romance.
And you that's like absolutely if you, frolic through romance, yeah.
If you are interested mm-hmm. in reading a book about something, like, I promise you it's there. And some of these, like, Facebook groups that are huge, like, hundreds of thousands of people in there, like, you type in, like, I want a romance book about a cowboy and a whatever, and they go here and they do this, and, like, they'll find it. Like, someone will find yeah. it. Like, there's yeah. a book written about it. Like, you can experience anything.
Are knowing sort of the overlap between, as we were saying, sort of maybe the beats and aesthetic overlap between romance and horror, is just the eldest sort of overlap of those things, just like the vampire thing, is like is vampires were
going back to the 1200s of
totally, because it's the same sort of right, it's like the same,
I think it's
like,
Greek mythology it goes back to.
Well, they, you know, vampires are kind of, you know, slutty part gods in a nice way.
I love that.
I actually want to talk about this because you bring up vampires, and even to answer your question about, you know, why did these hit, like what was special about them, even though like we could say like maybe nothing at all, but because they came out kind of right before like Trump had come on the scene, right? Like as a political candidate and then was elected president in 2016, we really started to see a shift in the romance genre towards monster romance, which has always been popular, like vampires, you know, Greek mythology, but really blew up. And I think it coincided with Ice Planet Barbarians, which I would categorize, although it's sci-fi, under monster romance still, because the question is always, the statement is, women would rather fuck a gentle, kind monster than a real life man, because because we can actually see the monster, but we don't know that what the men really are. And I think that's reflective. That's one part that I think kind of makes it blow up. The other part was TikTok, because as soon as you get a few people on board and they start talking about it and there's enough intrigue, I think, you know, it just right time, right place. But then also, just like with Greek mythology, just like with like vampire stuff, there is a whole creation myth to these books. You know what I mean? It's like the Saqui get stranded on a planet. They evolve over 300 years. Like they came on a pleasure cruiser. Like there's this whole thing about how they became. These
That's so
of, like,
funny. The origin is so funny. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Why Guys, did you think it was funny?
The origin of this book. It's so funny. This book that starts with a brutal rape scene, it goes to a place where you're like, what's, they're so mysterious. What's the background? How did this all happen? It happened because of a fucking Gilligan's Island setup, which is they were on a pleasure cruise. That's so funny. Like they were out like whatever. I was just on
sightseeing. They were literally sightseeing.
I was just on a cruise on a cruise called Joko Cruise that we were on as entertainment, and it's like a tabletop gaming cruise. So it's a bunch of nerds do like tabletop gaming. It was certainly a big romance fan community.
That sounds very furries. Fun.
It was super fun. Yeah. But I was just thinking the whole time that I was like, okay, so the cruise goes wrong. We get stuck somewhere and then we spawn a civilization.
This is the prequel to
I want is there a book about the cruise? There better be.
I wish there was. There probably is a fanfic somewhere.
I'm sure there's 7 million words dedicated to this in the fanfic.
And like also as you were talking, I was just thinking, so it's funny how the men on the planet ended up there on a pleasure cruise and the women ended up there by being sex trafficked. So very different origin stories. Well, that's Adam and Eve.
I know that I'm not sort of debating anything or sort of like going into arguing anything you said, but you'd said earlier that there aren't these elements of patriarchy, but like it does feel like their sort of like gender breakdown looked a lot like ours before they got stuck on and even still they're just like
that could be true.
They're looking for women to impregnate to breed. Thank you. And yes, the fucking tapeworms doing a lot of that work, but yeah, it was fascinating. The last quarter of this book was much more interesting than I think the first three quarters of the book were.
Why do you think was it the language barrier?
Well,
that
you just start getting like once the AI computer starts to explain what's happening. I mean, I understand that these aren't really things that you can sort of like lace in, and like part of the buildup is like you want to know who the characters are first before you get into the mythology, and sort of you like lay out the mythology. Like fucking the first book of the Lord of the Rings trilogy is just walking. So like I know that like that's the case in songs. It's walking. Yeah. So people who have not read the Lord of the Rings, you would be shocked to know how much walking and how many songs are in that book. But anyway, I just think that it paid off. There was like payoff in that last quarter because you're like, okay, this is putting all of this into a context that I couldn't possibly have known from the beginning.
Also very bold to not have your two characters communicating at all for the first 75%. Like, as a writer, I could never fucking pull that off, I feel like. And I do think she did.
It reminded me of, it reminded me of The Fifth Element, where the whole, in the movie The Fifth Element, is the love interest, the main character, but yeah. Bruce Willis's love interest. Sorry, this is already laden with sexist language, but they don't speak the same language throughout the entire movie. I think that their only attraction is that it's bleach-haired Bruce Willis.
Right.
And that's enough.
I was going to say it was the white bandage dress was doing all the talking, because the white bandage.
There was a lot of talking physically going on.
Yes. Well, that was a great movie. I love that movie.
Same with Georgie. You know, like, they still got along plenty well without communication for quite a while.
They sure did.
Yeah.
And Georgie is a bold character.
Georgie is a bold character. And I did like the, you know, like, I like that they're coming from different contexts. So it may, oh, by the way, when they go into the cave, he describes it as like her cavern. He describes the cave as like her vagina, which is so funny.
Well, he's a poet.
For sure. And I do like the idea that, like, because they're coming from different contexts, like, she's able to see that this is actually a spaceship. And, like, for him, who only has the context of this place, like, it just makes sense, like, in that context, like, he has been raised in of this place, and she ends up comparing a lot of it to, like, electronics that she's familiar with from home. So I thought that was cool.
It's very, very time traveler vibes. You know, like, you've read enough time traveler, like, whatever, where it's like you're trying to be like a phone. You know, how do you explain a phone to somebody that, like, doesn't know what I'm talking about? Yeah, right.
Exactly. I love that. E.T. having to explain that he needs to take apart the speak and spell for important reasons. Like, I think that's always a fun time.
I have to say that I greatly appreciate the comparisons you're bringing into this podcast, which we normally do not get, because it's normally just like preaching to the choir and we're just all discussing the same romance novels that we read.
Sure. Oh my God. Yeah. There's only so many tropes. So they get kicked around.
Yeah. There's definitely some favorites too.
They get kicked around the properties.
The cave or whatever. I do think like in Ruby Dixon is, so we can talk about like kind of the simplicity of her writing, which I think makes it very consumable, but also she gets a lot of archetypal things really correct, even down to like, for instance, the names of the characters. We have like Georgie is a very Southern American sounding name. It's also a little androgynous, which is strange, but you say it in the front of your mouth, Georgie. And then we have Vectol, which sounds otherworldly in a way. And again, you could make an argument that is this racist somehow? Maybe. Yeah. I would be open to that criticism to hearing that. But you know, you say it in the back of your mouth. You're saying it with a mouth that's wide open. They're like they're different from start to finish, and that's compelling. That's a good romance narrative.
Totally. Yeah, I like you could also rewrite this as if like she was from the South, she was from like Georgia, and he's from Southie. Like he's he's like a fourth or fifth or seventh Wahlberg.
Yeah, that is such a funny way. And also that romance certainly exists, by the way.
Yeah, that's somewhere too.
If I jump into the genre, if you both have infected me with the special ice planet tapeworm,
the romance queen.
The romance queen. I will start, like, every love interest is a guy from the town. Like, that's what I want. Everyone would be a like long lost Affleck or Wahlberg. But I'd make them likable.
Yeah. Get the accent in there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
We could talk about this all day, but you've already been on for an hour. I don't want to keep you forever. So Alex, thank you. Thank you so much. This has been a fucking
thank
blast.
Thank you. Anytime. Yeah. Honestly, if you were like, I want to talk about another
Don't say that. I'll hit you up.
Let me know.
Listen, pick up some more book.
I'm serious. I'm not polite. I'm not a polite person.
Okay. Neither are we. That's okay.
Listen, we will never.
I like that about you too.
Yeah, thank you so much. Do you want to give any closing words on how you felt about your experience today?
Yeah, I'm very, I was flattered to be asked. I'm glad to have gone through, you know, I inexplicably have gotten into, I was 39 when this happened, I'm 40. inexplicably I have gotten into wrestling, like the history of wrestling than anything else, and I can't quite put my finger on why, but I love what the aesthetic and the archetypes were doing with regard to just sort of ancient archetypes.
The heel, the hero. Yeah.
And just like, yeah. Vince McMahon's, who is the devil, who is an evil person, Vince McMahon's take on what he turned wrestling into is such an exquisite metaphor for what our country is now, what our country was, what our country pulled from, etc. And so I'm just obsessed with it. And it's a hard thing to love because everyone who's responsible for it is bad. Yeah. But it does a lot of explaining about who and what and how we are. And I feel like that background for reading this book and understanding sort of like what we were wrestling with, not just sort of like culturally what's happening, but like what's going on internally, what's going on sexually, what's going on by way of gender, et cetera. I think it made me appreciate it even more. Like there's a lot with regard to sorting through archetypes, mythology, et cetera, in these books this one book that I read one time, yeah, that I didn't necessarily expect, having only skimmed romance pages for horny passages in the past. And it has a lot of great horny passages.
It does.
That's just the tip of the horny iceberg. So welcome.
The tip of the pronged or whatever it is, barbed horny iceberg.
The horny blue dick. Yeah.
No pun intended. Someone who is married to someone who is obsessed with wrestling, especially old school wrestling, and the amount of documentaries I've had to fucking watch, this is a good take.
I'm so sorry, SJ.
This is a good
take. I'm so sorry.
I'm also sorry. Yeah.
So much media that I'm sure have had to endure.
It's hours of my life I'm never getting back. Probably days at this point. It's absurd.
That's what you get for marrying a man.
I'm really sorry. You're a hero. It's so funny. It's so funny because the group of people that I love this with are like is the queerest group of people that we're all just like, this was for men?
Right. And I'm like,
The gayest shit I've ever seen.
That very much tracks 100%. Oh, that
I'm like, I'm sorry. Your evangelical mother let you watch this?
Seriously. My friend Sam, who's a really fantastic painter, who I have a number of their watercolors of men fucking each other up in my office.
Oh, love that.
We're making a zine where I just take the most erotic screen grabs from wrestling, and then Sam is going to paint erotic watercolors of them.
Please, oh my God. Share these.
I will. I will. The second they're done, I will let you know.
I will buy them.
Obsessed. Oh, I want this. No, I love that. Okay, well, we know you have to go. So thank you
for having
so much.
It was a delight.
This was so wonderful.